Welcome to Opening Presents, the podcast about creative self-realization. My name is Aaron Robinson. Thank you so much for joining me. In today's episode, I sit down with Cesar Felix. He's an artist, educator, and the founder of Planet Over Profit Apparel, a hemp clothing line created to amplify the message of sustainability and to combat the destruction caused by corporate greed. In this conversation, we discuss Cesar's upbringing and his quest to find guidance. He's traveled down many different roads, but ultimately found it within himself. Cesar also shares how the process of going vegetarian opened his eyes to the uncomfortable truths of capitalism, which motivates him to build stronger communities that will advocate for Mother Earth. Enjoy this episode. Make sure to share it with a friend. Now, without further ado, welcome to Opening Presents. Welcome to Opening Presents. My name is Aaron Robinson. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Today, I have a very, very special guest who goes by the name of Cesar Felix. How are you?
Hey. I'm good.
Thanks for doing this.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm just like still coming off that random weird experience we just had.
Yeah, we just got off of a John Sweeney classic.
Yeah, we were blessed.
Yeah, blessed by,
future
his
governor, possibly.
Yeah, future governor. So here's a little background of what we just experienced. Before we started recording, we decided to take a step outside of the studio, just chop it up a little bit, get settled before this conversation takes place. And this older man in a plaid shirt and a hat comes over and hands us these business cards. And lo and behold, it's my neighbor that I've been like living next to.
I had no idea, by the way.
I've been in this place since April of last year, so it's like coming up on a year. This man haven't had one conversation with. He comes over with his chest out and tells us that he's running for governor. And the first thing that, what did you say to him? What
I was just like, first of all, he looks like everyone has seen this type of white old man before.
Oh yeah, everyone's neighbor, like
yeah,
basically Clint Eastwood in El Torino.
Yeah, exactly like that. A little less buff and just a weird little character. He had one of those classic trucker hats.
Yep,
said like military something.
Yeah,
came up super proud.
Yeah, with his like little clipboard and pencils, and tells us that he's running for governor. And the first thing Cesar says is like, oh, like, what do you think about Black Lives Matter? And this is what initiates the fucking avalanche of fumblery.
It like, was like watching a real politician. Like, he's probably pretty good. He was a classic politician and he spinned it.
For sure. And it was basically like Joe Biden's like avatar. Like if Joe Biden needed to go on hospice for like a week. Like, this dude could fall right into place and everyone would just be like, oh, yeah, Joe's just doing Joe. And but he goes, I think one of, like, his anecdotes for black folks not getting shot by the police is wearing gardening gloves. He's like, well, if you have, like gardening gloves, like these gloves that are different colors for your hands when you have your hands up, then you don't get shot.
Yeah, I was blown away by
that. I was like, wait. So we're supposed to have gardening gloves?
That we could find them in different shades.
Yeah, we could find gardening gloves in different shades.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's my neighbor who has a Black Lives Matter sign in his yard, and right above it has an American flag.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if...
Pick one.
Yeah, like, nah.
Because this country, I'm taking that.
I'm taking the Black Lives Matter sign, that's for sure.
It's just another
maddening element of living in Portland because it is the most disingenuous place I've ever been in my life.
Yeah, super
like
reformative.
It's this fake caring bullshit.
Oh my God.
It's like y'all will show up and just to look. Yeah. Y'all aren't participating. Y'all are looking and they're like, oh, they're not, their hearts aren't in it.
Yeah.
They're walled off.
Yeah. You could tell, like, a lot of people since I've gotten here to Portland, been out here like almost 7 years now. When I like first got out here, you kind of tell these white people have never really experienced people of color, like hardly.
Mm-hmm.
Like they literally went to schools where there was like the token people, mm-hmm. you know? And that's wild to me, you know, growing up in someone diverse like Tucson, Arizona. And I was just like coming out here like, what the fuck? Tripping out, being at a Hillsboro restaurant and being like, or even like Beaverton and at a Sherry's or something. And I'm like looking around like literally no one, not even the kitchen, like where you could at least find some gente back there, you know, like shit, someone's working. Go creep back there. Nobody.
Yeah.
Like, damn, this is a Twilight Zone shit.
Yo, it's fucking rough.
Yeah.
Like I don't know. Before it's like, it's easy to be like, obviously once we find our community, it's like, it's a beautiful thing. But then it's just like, wait, but there's like, it's just us. It's a small community if you really like look at it.
Yeah. I think that's how like we met. Like we would just like be at places where people of color are and be like, yo, what's up? You're dope.
Yeah.
And then just like, that's literally how small it is where like most people who are, I think, people of color and creatives, like we have all like ran into each other in some facet.
Yeah.
Because we don't have that many POC events that happen that much or like are had like, you know, big budgets behind them. So like, yeah, any chance that we get to hear something, like we're there, like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like, how do we deal with like the fatigue of whiteness? Cause it's like, they're not learning. Because they don't want to learn. They don't want to be empathetic. Yeah. They don't. It's all virtue signaling.
Mm-hmm.
It's like anything. Like the only time that they pay attention is when the world is watching.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they
put
on their capes and they get out there and get on TV and sign all these petitions when the world is watching. And then once there's no like media attention.
Yeah.
Wall of Moms goes away. Everyone just goes back home and works
like,
on their fucking
done.
Doodling. It's just like, y'all are just in it, like, for the accolades.
Absolutely. And, that's the biggest thing, too. It's like, we weren't done. Like, why did y'all just go back to work?
Y'all just started. It's like, all right, we're tired. We want our water break.
We finally understand what the struggle's like. Like, no, you did it for a weekend, Karen.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just... Yeah, I think that is really so tiring, having to come to that reality that in all reality, white people aren't doing enough to help change things systematically. That's, to me, one of the most apparent things we're seeing, because they're not calling out the things as much as they should be.
Yeah, well, they created the issues in the first place.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's like not taking ownership and accountability of something that they created.
And understanding that privilege is good. Like, it feels good. Like, why would you want to leave it?
Sure.
Obviously, right? Like, there's that demon, too, sitting in the room. Like, you know, most human beings, psychologically, I think if we were put in a position where we're going to choose one that's going to give us an advantage in this one existence that we know of, we're probably going to take that, right? We're not going to just be like, well, let me take the struggle, I guess.
Yeah, they're definitely like the Netflix and chill
of
ethnicities.
It's like,
I
can chill out.
Yeah, I can Uber Eats and just not do anything and get rewarded for my laziness.
Yep. Yeah, it's really maddening, too. It's like the people that put, you know, on indigenous land and don't leave. You know, just like give it to an indigenous person. Because like, yeah, that's one of the biggest things, too, is like really pissing me off lately of like understanding that black and brown people weren't ever given a manifest destiny. You know, that's huge for especially here in the Oregon country. Like there's families here rooted with this land that came from their ancestors who stole this land. And it's not even that far back.
Mm-mm.
It's like two generations, like your great, great grandfather was someone who took this land, and you can right that wrong. Like it's really that easy. And I think if you don't want to give your land, then fight for people of color enough to make them have their own land.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that's the options I think you should they should be thinking of that they have. Because if you really are down with people of color, like, the job's not done. Like, shit isn't changing, or especially also for, like, LGBTQ community. Shit ain't changing. For women, it ain't changing. Like, we really should be out here in the streets, like,
every day. No, every fucking day should just
we should
be,
live on
should
it.
Be a riot.
Yeah.
Like, every day should be absolutely. A riot for, like, until something actually changes.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, when I went to Standing Rock, like, a few years ago, when it was happening, and, like, that was honestly one of the most realist human experiences that I feel I've ever had. I felt that what we were doing as a collective was, like, just all around. It was, like, a real community. And it felt like I didn't have any, like, burdens to get up and, like, oh, let me go, you know, check my email or write, like, all these, like, societal shit that we're, like, so used to. Like, it was gone. Like, I could just literally go walk around. If I was hungry, I can go to a mess hall and go get some food. If I wanted to be productive, I can go chop some wood. There's plenty of shit to do. And, like, I can go get a fucking Reiki treatment.
Mm-hmm.
All in a day. And still have time to go chill with my family and friends and chill. And it just, for real, like, it gave me that real life human experience of, like, what it could be like if we were allowed to be, you know, in our tribes and our communities that were before colonization. And, like, it was just so real. And so to me, I was just like, this is a reality. We could do this to change shit. Live like this for a little bit. Change shit, and then we reshape society how we want it, you know?
Yeah, I think having opportunities to dip our toe into a more, I would say, like, indigenous or, like, centric
yeah.
type of holistic way of living
absolutely.
With, like, a community, I think, like, getting a taste, because I don't think it's for, like, Western society people, it's hard for us to, like, abandon all of our comforts, but mm-hmm. just to spend some time in it, and then you realize that you can, like, incorporate some of the methodologies or just some of the stuff little by little
mm-hmm.
over time, and then it becomes, like, a part of, like, your natural, like, even just as far as just, like, getting out into nature more frequently.
Yeah.
it's that simple. Could, like,
yeah,
can I take my shoes off and, like, walk on the ground and
yeah.
like just to connect with nature,
because yeah.
that's, like, where we come from, but yet we're, like,
and I think that's
severed.
Where, yeah, a lot of our, you know, collective traumas and anxieties and depressions can stem from, like, really being detached from our natural way of living, you know? Like, it's so sad. I find myself, like, literally longing for nature. I live in an apartment, so it's, like, I don't have a yard. And so, like, I literally play a game called, what is it? The Long Dark. It's, like, the saddest, just, like, Sims-style game where it's just, like, I just play and literally try to survive by chopping wood and, like, you know, like, really just, like, giving that alone experience, like, of just, like, being out there. Like,
because yeah, yeah.
I really just long for, like, to have some land, build mm-hmm. a community of tiny homes and live with my family and friends. And, like, that's what I would love to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, literally my main goal in life is to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, to me, it's just like, fuck, dude, it's so infuriating that we can't just live a more natural, you know, life that's harmonic to fucking the world. Like,
yeah.
the world functions in a certain manner, and we're going against the grain.
Yeah, we're, like, we're so, like...
And we're burning,
yeah,
you know?
Like, yeah, we're messing a lot of things up along the way, and like, how do we deprogram ourselves from this destructive cycle? And I think, and I don't know, I've been, like, harping on just, like, accountability. I'm not, like, the bootstrap person, like, but I am the person that, like, I'm starting to learn about human potential and shaping mm-hmm. the mind and shaping our spirit and our actions to align with a higher good, and our individual capacity to do this on our own, and how powerful each individual is. So, like, I think it comes from people banding together, but not, like, shoveling off the responsibility to others. Mm-hmm. Like if you're able, obviously it's like there's people that struggle and that like have issues, like mental issues, like mm-hmm. drug problems and all of those things. And whenever I say like, oh, like we have accountability and da da da.
And we need a community to help those people.
Yeah, right? Of course. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I'm not talking, obviously, like, mm-hmm. like I want you able-bodied, able-minded, strong person who mm-hmm. is in this victimized mentality. You take accountability for yourself mm-hmm. and you'll be strong enough to help the person in need.
Absolutely.
Don't like say like, oh, but what about, and change the conversation mm-hmm. to angle it towards, oh, we can't do it because there's yeah. people that struggle. I'm like, no, I'm talking about you, deflector, the mm-hmm. person who doesn't want to
yeah.
see their highest potential, or they'll yeah. constantly make excuses as to their, like, if I wanted to live the story of, man, my baseball coach fucking fucked up and cut me from the team, and they mm-hmm. didn't, and I wanted to assume the victim narrative, because everyone has a victim narrative. Mm-hmm. Is that the one that you want to live for yourself? Like, I have that story just like everybody yeah. else. Like, people not giving me opportunities for jobs,
yeah.
people firing me and for unjust causes, like trying to get me yeah. fired at like every single job I've ever had. I've always mm-hmm. had somebody that just had it out for me. But that's not the story that I'm choosing to put out into the mm-hmm. world. I'm putting out the story of,
yeah,
like, this is how I'm learning how to seize my power and see yeah. my worth and give and serve.
Yeah.
And everyone has that narrative, and to inspire each other to mm-hmm. seize that narrative yeah. and push that forward, I think, is something yeah. that's helpful.
Yeah, because I think, yeah, a lot of people have to get to that point, you mm-hmm. know? Like, for me, for my instance, like, growing up, like, I had a pretty rough upbringing. Like, I was one of seven. My dad's from Mexico. Had a crazy deportation story when I was around like eight or something. And like, just growing up around just drugs and violence and
what
the domestic dispute, Tucson, Arizona.
Mm.
And you know, always growing up dirt poor and shit. And went through a lot of that shit. And for sure, it's just like, definitely, I don't portray that shit, but it's just like, I think it's important for us to definitely share our stories, especially people of color, with these stories that we go through. Like, dude, it's just like so weird how like my dad's story is connected to something that I'm so passionate against dismantling in terms of capitalism. To me, capitalism is one of the biggest roots of all oppression and evil that we have on this planet. And it's one thing that I have made it kind of like my mission to kind of challenge, because not only in like my brand that I do, but just because of how rooted and seated it is in evilness. When my dad was deported, he was deported for some like weed.
Mm.
He sold weed to an undercover cop. Not a lot, not like bales and shit, wasn't a kingpin. Sold a little bit. He got, before he was deported, so this is what they do to a lot of migrant and illegal people. Well, they're not even legal people, right? These are native indigenous people to the Americas. Let's get that right. But so my dad, before he got deported, they have this like work. I don't know how, right? If he applied as an illegal person to any job, he wouldn't get hired. But through jail, he was able to get employment through Walmart.
What?
Yes. He was able to work through Walmart. And I don't know, I don't think he was choosing the work. It was just an opportunity. Hey, you get to spend time at work or jail. I'm going to go spend some time at work. So they're exploiting this man's labor. And all the while, they're paying him probably cents on the dollar. Prison's probably going to cut. He's going to cut. And he's not the only one they're probably doing this to, right?
Sure.
Walmart's all over the fucking country. And they had him work at Walmart for like 9 months for the duration of his time in jail. And I remember going to bring your kids to work day with him. And it was just so weird. Like, just Walmart in general, just like a weird fucking conglomerate.
Yeah.
But so when I didn't get that till I was older, that like, oh, I was just like happy my dad's not deported yet. You know, so he's working and I get to see him. I can go see him at work. And so, but then after the 9 months were done, he was then shipped out
wow.
to Mexico. Yeah.
Wait, so I had no clue that they fucking did that
shit. Yeah, like,
man. So he's, instead of going to jail.
That's modern day slavery.
Yeah. Instead of going to jail, he went to Walmart.
Yeah.
To work.
So he would go to Walmart and then come back at night to jail.
What?
And then be shipped back. Dude. It was just like, yeah, it's a whole money scheme. Yeah. You know, industrial prison complex and the conglomerates are all together. Who, you know, they have their vending machines for these fucking guys, right?
Yeah.
They gotta fill these snacks and they gotta get their work boots.
Yeah.
And it's a whole thing. And to me, that's why it's so like disgusting how capitalism works and it's able to exploit so many people all in the name of profit.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's just
damn, that's like a seed that was planted within you, like to experience that with your family.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind if I ask like where your dad is now? Sorry.
He is we'll say he's in Mexico enjoying his life.
Oh yeah.
I haven't spoken to my dad. He is, you know, he wasn't really a good person.
Sure.
In all reality, but it's just fucked up that those circumstances happen to people.
Yeah.
And it's just weird where, you know, things come out full circle and like it's just been on this wave for the last like maybe decade of my life where I've just been on this journey of like,
mm-hmm.
I got to live in my truth.
Yeah.
To live in my truth. I can't continue to do fake shit.
Yeah.
Where it's like, even though like I'd be eating fucking Beyond Meat, which is fake shit, right? but it's just the reality of like living in my truths of like what feels right to me after I did some research on my own of like, you know, of coming into this reality that like I am this ultimate person who's empowering my life moving forward, right? All the actions that I've ever done, it's because of me. I have to hold accountability for my actions. And I think that's one of the biggest things I've ever learned as a young adult. Like, be accountable for your shit. Like, those are things that you can live in your truth with. Of like, be honest.
Yeah. What was the turning point like for you to finally choose to live in your truth? Because I have a very similar story as like living other people's truths.
Yeah.
Like I basically just be outsourcing like who I should be. I'm looking at the world and like taking notes from my mom and from my mm-hmm. friends and my classmates and my teachers mm-hmm. and my brother, and everybody saw me as something
mm-hmm.
that wasn't my truth, but I tried my damnedest to be exactly what they wanted me to be, which left me confused and mm-hmm. like low self-worth and not knowing where I fit. Until mm-hmm. like I flipped it around, was like, no, like I know what's best for me, and
mm-hmm.
like finding my spiritual practice and like kind of just shooting shots in the dark, like deciding to move when I was 25 after just having enough. I had my breaking point. I was like, mm-hmm. you know what? I got to do something. But what was that like moment for you to be like, you know what? I don't know what's on the other side of this, but the way that shit's going right now, ain't it?
Wow. It's funny that you said, because immediately thought, like, it's been a few moments, which is it's the depressing part about it, is that I've had too many of those moments where, like, fuck, I got to do something.
Mm.
Where, like, you know, all my upbringing, going up through that shit, like, being a little kid, like, I was always seeking, you know, some type of, because as men, right, we grow up with this infatuation for our fathers.
Yes.
Right. We want to be them. We want to be, you know, everything, a part of them. Right. So I think that's at the root of a lot of male depression, which is something that was like constantly plaguing me. Right. Just like everybody else still does. Right. And it's crazy because a lot of this is unpacking that I've been doing just recently. Mm-hmm, you know, this is mm-hmm. stuff that I'm like, oh, shit.
It's ongoing.
I went through that. You know, I did. I went through that shit and I'm here now, which is just sometimes so trippy. But like, yeah, dude, I had this incident with a cop one time when I was like 9, 10 years old, where I was accused of stealing from a neighbor of mine. I used to play with them. They're two little white kids.
Mm-hmm.
They accused me of stealing $50. I didn't. I was like this really good, humble kid. Didn't have a lot. So like I knew, you know, what shit was worth. So I would never steal, go into someone's house. Like, I wasn't raised like that, mm-hmm. you know, steal. And so I got accused. All the while I'm at home playing, you know, with my sister and my cousin was there. That's it. You know, my parents left us probably out to the casino or something. And and so all the while I'm there, and all of a sudden we hear this loud banging. Dun, 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 dun. Like, I just remember it. Just like, you know, cops, if you ever had a cop experience when they bang the window or mm-hmm. the door with their flashlight. And so he's banging, and all the, like, we're taught, don't fucking open the door to nobody. You're not here. You pretend like you're not here. So we did that. He wasn't buying it. He's yelling, I need Caesar Felix to come out right now. And so, like, at that point, like, my cousin's getting scared. He's, like, doesn't know what to do. And he's probably, like, 15. My sister who's there is probably, like, 12. And he comes in, just walks right in. I'm hiding under my mom's bed, terrified. Like, this guy's screaming for my name. I didn't do anything. Like, there's, it's a cop. It's the ultimate boogeyman, right? And I'm under my mom's bedroom bed. He walked all the way in, proceeded to tell me to get the fuck, you know, aggressively get up under that, get, you know, from out that bed. And he, without word, puts handcuffs on me.
Wow.
9 years old. I'm a kid. I'm bawling too.
Fuck.
Like, I'm in tears, man. I'm crying. Like, I'm don't know what's going on, you know, because as a cop, he's just interrogating me immediately in my mom's room. He's telling me, where is the money? I know you took it. Where's the money? And I'm just bawling. Like, I'm shaking. I'm like, fuck, I didn't take it. I didn't take it, you know? And I'm just snots running, everything. And the cop looks over. I remember this. He looks over to my sister and my cousin who are standing at the door, like, scared of shit. And the cop just, like, he doesn't have it. He would have told me by now. You know, now to sit back and think about that, like, oh, he's done this before.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
He's interrogated enough children to know what that, you know, lie detector is.
Wow.
And I was just, like, fucking shook from that. But I never processed that. I just, like, oh, that's a normal thing till, you know, recent, you know, police stuff started coming up. And I'm just like, oh, shit. Like, I have that. Like, my sister, like, you're there. You remember that shit? And it was just so, like, that shit was just, like, I'm processing that now. That was heavy. That kind of, like, shaped me in the way I acted. I really, at that time, too, I really started changing the way I perceived myself. Like, I didn't want to attach myself to anything Mexican.
Mm.
Subconsciously, right?
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
I wanted to be Zach Morris on TV as opposed to Slater, you know, or just like, even though he's Latino, right? But in the show, he wasn't really portrayed like that. But it was just like this thought process, like, I need to be someone I'm not. And I need to make sure I'm that all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't be too Mexican. And like, most of my friends growing up, like, were black and brown. And so, like, just grew up heavy in the streets, just hanging out. Like, I did some, like, dumb neighborhood jumping gang. I got jumped in. And they used to have me breaking the houses as a kid. Breaking the houses. And it was just, like, first of all, I was just willing to do anything. Because, like, these are older boys. Like, I'm seeking that admiration, that father figure. And so I'm breaking into houses, and one time they make me break into this neighbor, lived in the cul-de-sac that we all did, and he made me break into his house. And I'll never forget it. And I tell this to my students, actually. I tell them, I walked into his house. He didn't have anything in his house.
Mm.
No furniture, no food. Barely a couple shirts in the closet. Like, this is the most poorest house ever. And I was poor. You know, like, I had lawn furniture in my house. You know? And I was just, in that moment, I was like, dude, what am I doing here? Like, why am I hanging out with these losers? Why they're making me break into here?
Yeah.
Like, this could be my house. And I remember, like, I leave, I hop out the same window that I broke. Mind you, that now they have to deal with the broken window. Yeah. I'm leaving. They're like, what'd you get? Nothing, man. And I went home. And I was just like, I'm done with these kids. And, like, I chose, like, sports. I was like, fuck, I need to go sport route. Because mm-hmm. I'm just going to end up like my brothers or like my dad and end up selling drugs soon. Mm-hmm. So I saw that. And so I started realizing I was hanging out with different friends that were molding me and shaping me. And all the while, stripping me of that initial whiteness that I had to feel that I was living in.
Mm-hmm.
So now my black and brown friends are, you know, stripping that kind of mentality. And so that allowed me to see things differently and be proud of myself. And now I was seeing, okay, yeah, I'm a brown boy, you know, and being okay with that because my friends are too, you know? And so fast forward to 2012, 11-ish, I get on this kick about like my body and it being a temple.
That it is.
Right? And so I don't know how like I really got to that point where there was like, I just remember really getting on to fucking Dr. Sebi and really talking about that. And I don't know who said this quote, but they're like, make your body a temple, not a tomb. So then I was like, huh, shit. So that makes sense. And I started looking into fucking veganism and not eating meat and seeing just the roots of all that shit. So I gave it up initially for Lent, Catholic thing. And I gave it, I wasn't even Catholic. My ex-girlfriend at the time was Catholic. And she's like, we have to give up something. I'm like, oh, okay, well, fuck it. We'll give up, I'll give up meat. Red meat and chicken. And I was like, let's eat seafood and shit. But it's like, cool, I did that. Like, and I was a bigger guy. Like, when I first started, like, I was probably like, I feel like I'm almost there now because of fucking COVID. But shit, when I first started out being vegan, non-vegan, like vegetarian, I was probably like 240, 250. And like really feeling unhealthy, like even early. I was probably like 23 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I'm like, okay, I gave the chicken for red meat for 30 days. Felt great. Felt really great. And I was like, fuck, I feel like less sluggish. I feel like I have more energy, loving it. I started doing more research, like, okay, what's the benefits of all that shit? Oh, of course, when you look up veganism or anything, it's all white, right? It's just like, oh, like how to get yoga bods or like smoothies and acai.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, whatever. But for some reason, I found these little back holes where there was like early black and brown vegans that were like doing the thing. And so then I, you know, saw them and I was like, okay, especially Dr. Sebi was like talking about some shit. So that really put me on. And then it started once then I feel like I learned about the pineal gland, right? And it was decalcifying my brain.
Yeah.
And it was something that was not serving me. And so then, you know, one of the major things that Dr. Sebi talks about is like how you should eat based on like where your ancestry line comes from, right? Like you should eat native fruits and vegetables of that region because that's like your DNA needs that shit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so realizing that, I was like, okay, I'm an indigenous, you know, native person to this Americas. We didn't have cows, chickens, and pigs until colonization came here. Then I was like, fuck, it's mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't have that.
Yeah. It seems like throughout, thank you for sharing that like beautiful story. Cause it really creates like a full picture. Cause all of us have our own version of that to various alleyways that we go through and to navigate that as a young boy turning into a young man, like without a father figure, but then like seeking like that void to be filled within different communities, whether they're like the neighborhood kids or sports teams, but then like finding almost like that for yourself. It was like, all right, like,
oh yeah, because nobody was fucking with it with me when I was talking about that shit.
Yeah, but it's like, oh, like I can empower myself when it comes to diet and putting these things into my body to like raise my consciousness level and like
to make myself feel better, right?
Exactly. It wasn't saying like, hey friends, like make me feel like I'm part of this group. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey self, like let's elevate and connect with ourselves
and
on
listen
a
to
level.
Myself, right? Yeah.
Definitely. When you do change your diet, what were some of like the initial, like what was that big, like when like the leaf turned and it's like, oh, I'm going to commit to this thing. Like, are you still vegan?
Yeah,
are you
absolutely.
Still,
yeah.
So how many years is this now?
Well, I went vegetarian early for a couple years. So I did like 2012, you know, ish. So it's been like 7-8 years vegan and then the rest kind of like vegetarian. But that was kind of a process too that I took, you know, that's kindness to myself and taking process of realizing that it's not going to happen overnight, which I think a lot of vegan people miss, where it's like, if you know better, you do better.
Yeah.
Like immediately. It's like, no, let me take my pace. And I was never listening to those type of people. But once I got in, I was just realizing the benefits of me doing this. And then also the greater impact outside of it, right? We're talking about deforestation that comes with the meat industries.
Yeah.
And also me being, I love animals. So then coming out to Portland really like radicalized that for me. Like I was a hardcore vegan when I first moved out here, like hardcore. Did everything vegan, was at all the festivals and shit. And I did some like vigils and stuff where I'd go to Washington and it's like fucking deep into Washington and it's just like by truckers and shit. And I'm just there with a bunch of like little, you know, white people.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, and you know, some of them were cool and definitely fucked with them. But I would be out there and like see these really like powerful moments that I was having personally, right? It wasn't dictated by anybody else, but it was me personally there witnessing these cows that are off to slaughter. And you kind of share this moment, like they're looking at you. If you ever look at a cow or a horse, like those eyes are intense, man.
Yeah.
Like, it's powerful. There's that's a being that
is
like ancient and it's like.
And its presence.
Yeah. It's beautiful. And so, but seeing it on that spectrum of seeing these cows like literally in their own shit, knee deep, and they have sores, like cancerous tumors on their body. And they're going to go slice that up and feed it to people. You know, and they don't give a shit. And you could see the cows, and these are probably expired dairy cows. So they've spent the life of torture. And now you have these cows, they're, you can see them crying almost human-like.
Yeah.
And in tears. And I'm just like, man, I'm saying I love you. I'm screaming I love you to these cows because I know they've probably never heard that. And love is a powerful thing, even the words of it. And sharing that and being like in fucking tears because like these sentient beings are like being slaughtered because of a way that, you know, we just adopted because of colonization. Like there were definitely, I'm a vegan and this is like controversial to a lot of people, but it's like, I'm a vegan that if you're an indigenous person or like you have all the rights to your traditions of how you get your meat or your protein or that sense, because there's honor to that. There is culture to that. It's not in a greedy, you know, form. Like mass factory shit is disgusting.
Yeah.
For anything, right? We haven't even got to fashion yet, but that's a whole nother thing. But in anything mass produced, I think is a detriment to our society.
It is. But how do you like, how does this society rein in its greed?
Cool. That's gonna take the inner work. That's why we need you.
That's why we need us,
right?
I think that's a beautiful segue to introduce Planet Over Profit to our listeners.
Yeah. So I own Planet Over Profit Apparel. It's a sustainable hemp clothing company. I've done this for it's like 8 years now. 2015 I started. I started the initial idea in Tucson, Arizona, and I had these shirts from like Custom Inc. and like just this online platform that makes you like fucking soccer mom shirts. And I just saw this font. It was like a money font. And I was like, oh, dope. That would be fire. And so I put that on a shirt And then it was just an organic cotton t-shirt. I was like, oh, okay, that's dope. It's sustainable, you know, organic cotton. And then I do it. I post up on Earth Day. Like I was working at a Greek restaurant right at the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the owner if I could borrow a table and some chairs so I could post up on that corner, because it was pretty popular, 4th Avenue on Tucson. So it's pretty busy around there, foot traffic wise. And so I posted up, had some signs, like some quotes, some like climate justice shit. and I posted
Save the cows.
Yeah, like I'm out there like, yo, you guys need to fucking look up or some shit, you know? And so I'm sitting out there and I don't sell shit. I sell one shirt to this one guy. And this one guy is just like, dude, he's like, I don't even really like the shirt. He told me straight out. He's like, I don't really like it. He's like, I don't really wear these type of shirts. But he's like, I'm going to tell you, he's like, I appreciate you being out here.
Mm.
He said, it doesn't matter. Like, you set this up. You came up with this idea to do this. And like, props to you for doing it. And mm-hmm. that's what he told me. And I was just like, he's like, and I'm going to buy this so it can motivate you to keep going.
Mm.
And it was just like this random like construction worker, white guy. And I was just like, damn, dope, dude. You know, you came to me in a different form, you know, and this great wisdom.
Sure.
You know, and so I took that and I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to just wear this shirt everywhere I go.
Mm-hmm.
And then people ask me, I would backpack it. Like, you know, like I'm selling mixtapes.
Mm-hmm.
Would be that style. I'll be going to like bars or sporting events. And Tucson, Arizona's big university college town. Like Wildcats are there.
Mm-hmm.
It's really big. So big tailgates and all that kind of shit. So I would go and I'd be wearing this shirt, like playing over profit, like feel like still got my fade and I'm, you know, doing it my way. And like yeah. normally like they'd be like, oh, like they'd fuck with it or they wouldn't, or they wouldn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, like I got into these spaces and I was having these conversations with people that weren't just about beer or football.
Sure.
You know, they were about fucking greed and corruption and the government and things that got deeper than whatever the fuck we were at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this now I was just like, I'm at a fucking nightclub and I'm wearing my shirt and people are, hey, I fuck with that. And yeah. Now I'm sending vibrations to these people, right? Like,
yeah,
to something that they resonate with. And it's a message that I think most people do, planet over profit, right? Like, we believe fucking we matter more than this corporate greed and all this shit that they want, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was cool to see that. And that shit really motivated me to be like, oh, shit, like, this is something. Walking down the street, people honking, like, if I'm holding a sign.
Yeah.
You know, so it became really powerful to me. And this message, like, started a little life of its own. So mm-hmm. I'm just like...
Yeah. That's beautiful that like you expressing that like at a nightclub, like how just a simple message of planet over profit can cut through
mm-hmm.
the bullshit. It can cut through like the shots.
Matrix. Right?
Yeah. It's like you're wasted uh-huh. and you see that and it's like, wait, what? And it
I love
snaps you, it snaps you out of like the hypnosis that was planned for you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, yo, this is a mass hypnosis. Uh-huh. They're trying to distract you. But then like truth arises and it's like, oh yeah, like that's me, like in all of it, in to the core, and to be able to cut through, like that's as far as communication is concerned, mm-hmm. it's like that's all we can ever ask for. At least like truth has that inherent resonant frequency within it, and
exactly.
it's nice to like land on something that you know you can put your heart into, mm-hmm. and that it's moving things forward, and it's your offering. It's like I think a lot of people kind of feel like they have to do all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're like, oh, I gotta save the world. It's like, no, it's like carve out like your area, mm-hmm. make it beautiful, and just put your heart into it and like allow it to do its work
mm-hmm.
instead of having 10 million things and then not executing on any of them. But you have this intention, but there's no application, mm-hmm. so you can't heal the world
because
you haven't put it out there yet.
Exactly,
and just to like see that it has a life. You need to give it to the world for you to get feedback and how it can like shift over time. How have you mm-hmm. seen Planet Over Profit like grow and like what has it given you in return? Mm. What has it given you?
Man, it's literally at one point it was giving me funds enough to keep me from being homeless when I first went out to Portland. Like, there was a time where I was like, fuck, I don't have money. And I don't have family to call and be like, yo, can you spot that shit? It's not there. So I was literally in a space where I was like fucking donating plasma. Like, wow. All the while being like a substitute teacher. Like, mm-hmm. So I didn't get a contract. So I'd be like, in the summer, I'm fucked, right? I didn't, like, all the while, I don't want to go fucking work at some random little job. So, like, I would just hustle and, like, my fucking brand, my hemp clothing, which was originally in a store here in Portland on Northeast Alberta called Portland Hemp Works. That's where, like, I started. But then I was doing really well there. And then the owner got a divorce. So then he closed the store. And then so I had a bunch of inventory. I had, like, $3,000 of inventory. I'm like, oh, shit. Like, mm-hmm. This is all I have. Like, I went all in. And I was, like, hopping from place to place. And then, like, I just needed a little bit more longer stability. So I asked for, or I looked at Craigslist and I saw this ad for, like, it was, like, a month and a half for this apartment in Northeast, like, Killingsworth.
Mm-hmm.
And I got this space from this woman. She was just like, I need someone to take over this sublease, you know, this lease till whatever. And so I'm like, yeah, fuck it. She's like, I need a deposit of this and that. I'm like, I don't have it. And I was like, I don't have it. And she's like, well, I was like, what I do have, I was like, I have my laptop and I have my $3,000 worth of inventory that you could take. I'll sign it over to you right now.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, okay, that'll do. So I was able to get his fucking space for a little bit. Gave me some breathing room.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I ended up getting, like, a full-time teaching job. And then, like, I was able to get my own shit together. And, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, that's wild. But it's, like, God comes in at, like, the right time. Ooh. It's, like, you.
Yeah.
I think just, like, seeing it through and being on, like, yeah. your team. Like, you, not at one point mm-hmm. did you say, like, man, fuck everybody, blah blah blah.
Yeah, no,
like, it's just like
you, there's no time for that.
Yeah,
really.
You, like, staying down for yourself is the thing that mm-hmm. ultimately allows a new leaf to turn.
Yeah.
And it's like at yeah. like the last hour, like, something falls into your favor, and it's mm-hmm. like that's just like a beautiful thing. And, like, it's hard to put into words, like, the magic of this world, and, mm-hmm. and, like, we're getting to know each other more, but just, like, hearing, like, your journey, and it's like I've have, like, little glimpses of where, like, similar things have happened where it's like, how the fuck did this shit just happen?
Yeah.
Like, at the very last minute, it's just kind
divine,
of like,
right?
Yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know, like the last bowling pin, yeah. like in, like, a movie where it's just like it's almost a strike, and
yeah.
then it's just like the last one just swirling around, and then yep. it just falls, and it's like,
it's,
you fucking
moment.
Yeah, you're, I'll yeah. be all right, I'll be all right.
Yeah.
But yeah, how do you keep, like, faith, because it seems like you've had, like, a lot of ups and downs. It's like a windy yeah. road, but it's like, how do you keep faith in through it all?
I think my continuation to love myself has been the biggest motivator, which is still a constant battle. It's not something that I've won or I've accomplished. It's something that I know now is a thing that I have. It takes work, and it's constant work to remind myself of how special I am. And, mm-hmm. you know, before I couldn't say that, you know, and I think I could say that proudly and not carry ego or anything with that. You know, I'm proud of myself for where I've come. And I think a lot of people around me would say the same thing, because a lot of them couldn't envision where I'm at today. And especially with this brand that I'm doing, I'm a full-time teacher at a high school. And, you know, I'm teaching entrepreneurship and computer applications. Like, I'm doing some shit. And, like, all the while not doing it because I want dollar. I didn't sell my soul mm-hmm. because I've tried that before, you know, sales jobs, or try to do something really, like, businessy. And, like, but all that, I didn't want to do that. I'd rather do it for myself and do it in a way that's different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why does capitalism, or, like, this idea of having a business, have to be so greedy? Like, I don't, like, really care about marginal growth and these, like, you know, yearly, quarterly things of just, like, that people are so obsessed with. Like, if my shit sells, it sells. And so far I'm lucky that it has been.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think that would be a telltale sign of, like, okay, maybe I should hang it up. But the fact that it is selling and I can go to a market and sell to a variety of people. Like, it's beautiful to see that. And that people, like, will often ask me, like, oh, like, how long have you been working for this company? I'm like, damn, you don't even believe it's mine?
You're like, I'm employee number one.
Yeah, and I'm just like, wow. Like, to me, it's just like, that feels good. And I'm just like, I never thought that I would, you know, come up with a brand that people actually would buy. And especially, you know, I'm selling sustainable hemp clothing. Like, you could do a Google search and look up indigenous or any people of color doing sustainable streetwear fashion.
It's a short list.
It's a very short list. And it's something I'm like really proud that I'm like, hopefully it's starting the conversation for people to think that way. Because I know a lot of people are just like, well, fuck, that's expensive. Like, it, there leaves no room for profit margin, right? But it's like, for me, I'm doing this with a different angle, different approach that a normal business person would. Like, oh, because I've heard it, like, you know, I talk to business people all the time, and they're like, you should do this, or you should do that. I'm like, to me, that's not organic in my own world. So, like, to me, I'm letting it live the way it's living, and the flame is going and even getting a little brighter. And so me, I'm just like, well, then, you know, you wouldn't feed a fire, right? Like that. And I think that really starts like that mindset of like getting into greedy levels of like, you could be bigger, you could be this. Yeah, but I'm also staying true to myself. And, you know, and it'd be nice to make this my full-time job where I'm like, okay, yeah, I sell sustainable clothing and dope fashion, you know, to a wider audience. But I'm okay with it taking a while. You know, it's not something that I'm rushing.
Sure. Yeah, and you said that you're teaching kids as well. Like, what has that experience been for you to be an example for kids?
Ooh, man, it's still like I was telling you earlier, it's really surreal to be in this experience of sharing what I know and what I've gone through with kids that are growing up in almost similar environments to, as me. You know, these are Southeast Portland kids near Gresham. These are kids coming from tough upbringings, and you know, a lot of the high schools just really didn't know how to harbor such special, you know, amazing lights they are to the world. And it happens to a lot of, you know, black and brown kids and poor white kids, you know, where they're really left out there to kind of fend for themselves when they know damn right these kids can't do it, you know, by themselves. It takes a community. And so a lot of these kids are left out to dry by their regular schools. And so we're fortunate to be in a position to get these kids. And like, I love the kids I work with. They teach me something all the time. The best thing they taught me is patience. Like, cause I've had my moments, man. When I first started as a sub, like, this school was wild. It was bonkers.
Yeah. To witness like a child's like transformation though. And it's like, how malleable they are at that age. It's like they can learn so quickly.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, we like adults are malleable. Yes. But like the ability for a kid to learn and pick up new things. It's like, that should be like where every single dollar is put towards. It's
yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Like if you want society to move forward, it's all in the kids.
Yeah.
And it's like, we're doing them such a disservice.
Yep.
Like at every single turn, we're letting all the kids down. Like,
absolutely.
Like education, diet, food, exercise, all of it. Like we are fumbling the bag. And it's a wild thing, but it's like, I'm grateful for people like you that are, that like see the future. And it's like to have a hands on. And it's like, there's other ways that people can be involved with like helping kids if you don't have your own and whatnot, but.
Absolutely. And it's something that I think, obviously society takes for granted, right? We think, I don't get paid shit.
Yeah. True.
I don't. Yeah. It's really sad.
Teachers in general don't get paid.
And I'm super honest with my kids. So I'll straight up tell them like, I don't make shit, and they know it. And they're like, you know, they're empathetic to my situation. They're like, damn, and you got student loans? Like, they know all this shit about my, like, finance. And I'm like, yeah, I do. But I'm here for you, you know, ultimately. Yeah. Like, because my path, I didn't want to do something that was mindless, mm-hmm. you know, that I just was a robot to my job. Like, fuck that. I'm a human being.
Yeah.
On a human experience, and all this shit is made up, and you want me to give up my life. Like, we don't know what happens after, right?
Yeah.
So we don't, like, this could ultimately be it as this experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, to think it just blows my mind that we're stuck in this colonized fucking society where, like, fuck, dude, hell no. If this was, like, our tribes, like, we were allowed to just be, we would have so much leisure time. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right?
That's probably,
to,
like,
work on ourselves.
Biggest, my biggest fear is, like, being at, like, this big old company, like, with, like, bosses mm-hmm. and, like, these quarterly meetings and sending emails
all
day long, and then having to be, not being able to choose the people I was around. Like, all right, these are the people that are on your team. And it's like, mm-hmm. wait, I don't get to, like, kind of, like, naturally gravitate towards synergy and high expression mm-hmm. of energy and collaboration and excitement, where we prioritize, like, our shared values and beliefs and work together. It's like, I want to cultivate this electricity and, mm-hmm. and put it out into the world to impact people.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, like, I got to sit in this, like, this fucking dull room with, like, low vibration, people waiting to be told what to do on this schedule. Mm-hmm. And it's just like the wheel turns.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, yo, like, where's, like, the free flow of like energy and flow? Like,
dude,
like, that just seems like a fucking hell. So, like, thank you for being on your journey, because whenever I link up with people like you, it's like, it gives me more confidence to stick it to, like, stick to my shit and just stay on the course.
Because,
like, there's going to be, like, a breakthrough
at
whatever point where we're able to receive the abundance that we all deserve.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a long game, right?
Yeah. And most definitely. It's a long game. And learning to have the patience, like, mm-hmm. as you were alluding to before, because it's like, It's never stagnant. It's never, like, at any point where, like, frustration builds, it's because we're like, oh my God, things haven't changed. And it's like, no, it's going to change.
Yeah.
It's always going to fucking change.
Yep.
Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our beautiful listeners?
Yeah. Definitely support the message, the brand. Any bit of it helps, the support. Just trying to create a movement of true sustainability, because right now we see a lot of performative stuff.
Portland's good at that.
Yeah, super greenwashed everything. You know, everything's organic, but ultimately hemp is something that we should be, like, advocating strongly for, and not just for fashion, but in so much, right? We know about the CBD oils and cannabinoids and the amazing things that does for our brains and all that shit. But hemp also has so many other properties. Like, did you know we could build houses with hempcrete?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that are flame resistant.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Flame resistant. So think about how awesome hemp houses would make sense in California with the wildfires.
Yeah.
Flame resistant. Like, you literally can torch that shit with the flamethrower for hours and it won't burn.
Wow.
And the antimicrobial, like, there's so many benefits to that. Insulation properties. But, like, hemp is, like, something we really need to advocate, because for fashion alone, the benefits that it does is it gives back to the soil.
Mm.
Our soil is madly depleted right now. It's like they're literally running out of soil, fertile soil lands, because they're so exploited. And so hemp has the ability to heal the soil, to take in more CO2 than trees. And the fact that hemp grows, like, 6 to 8 months, you have your product. You know, you don't have to take two to five years for a tree to make wood. You can make paper,
mm-hmm.
you know, out of hemp. There's so many things, and I think a lot of people kind of are left out in the dark,
because, mm-hmm.
like, that's how I was with fashion. When I first felt hemp, I was like, fuck, dude, like, this is good quality stuff, like, why aren't we using this? And then the properties that it comes with, right? It's UV protected, mold and bacteria resistant, naturally, no pesticides, no chemicals, and it's going to biodegrade. It's not going to end up in our landfills or in our waterways. And so to me, it's just like, damn, we really need to speak up for hemp as a whole. And the thing is, to speak for it in a way that's going to benefit the communities of color.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at the hemp world, it's very white, super white. And, you know, hemp historically has been all around people of color communities that have helped communities in so many ways. And so I think kind of taking that power back from that plant and putting it in the hands of people of color. Like, I was blessed to speak at an event, a hemp, like all POC hemp convention.
Nice. In Portland.
Yeah, it was led by Q. She is amazing, Portland activist. She does Afro Village PDX, and amazing woman. She invited me to speak on that, and like I was literally the only one talking about fashion, you know, in terms of the hemp world. So it's really important that, you know, someone indigenous POC is like in there. So, you know, you supporting me in sustainable fashion movement is gonna help me open doors for everyone else, because I would love to see all these brands that want to come up and start up think of hemp. You know, it's not an outlandish idea.
Sure.
You know, you can create a very niche product from hemp and make something really dope.
Yeah.
And that eventually is going to reach the, you know, the levels where it's very affordable for everyone else.
Yeah. I hope we get there.
Mm-hmm.
Where can people find you on the interwebs?
On the interwebs. Planetoverprofit.store, Instagram, Facebook, Planet Over Profit Apparel. You can find me there. I also do a little bit of arte on the side, you know. I do a little cartoon art, you know, some logos, all that good stuff. So I do a little bit of that on my personal page, C's Art. I'm sure Aaron can probably tag me in that or something.
Yeah, I'll put that on the description.
But yeah, you know, just trying to create, and I think I'm just trying to live my truth and love who I'm becoming all the while and appreciate these moments. I'm about to be a father.
Congratulations. How do you feel? How do you feel like at this point right now?
At this point right now, yeah. I am excited. I'm naming our baby girl Quali.
Nice.
Quali is an Aztec name, meaning a good thing or good. And so I have this newfound like drive to not only succeed for myself, but now I'm trying to succeed for, you know, my lineage now, right?
Yeah.
It seems so epic, and it seems so like I want to make a better world for her, and I want her to know that I tried and that I'm actively going to keep working, you know, for as long as she knows me. And so I love her to death already, and I love my partner Kashmir so much, and I'm just like in this like weird little cloud, like, even though, because it's tough to be going through the process on the dad side, even more so on the women's side, obviously, but on the dad side you don't really hear about it too much, you know, especially from men of color to kind of speak on that. So it's beautiful to also be going through it with one of my best friends. He also recently found out he was having a baby. So we get to kind of go through it and kind of live in that bubble, because it gets really isolated.
Yeah. And I could only imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a few years out.
Yeah. From that. You know, if you're blessed to get there, you know, you're going to be a great dad, and you're going to be able to offer a young human something valuable.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's amazing to feel that. I'm excited, but you know, shout out to doing the inner work, because all of us men have a lot of work to do. And you know, and a lot of fucking work to do in terms of helping our sisters out in this world,
mm-hmm.
and our queens, and really, you know, doing the work to make them feel, you know, fucking safe. Safe is the biggest thing, you know. And now I'm thinking I'm having a daughter, and to share that, you know, that fear now, that so many women have on a daily basis. Mm. It's something that, yeah, a lot of us men need to address. And a lot of that comes from the inner work, because we're all hurt. We're all, you know, expressing it in different ways, but it's all male depression, which, I wanted to definitely make note of this. I'm listening to this audiobook, and I've been for like a couple of years. That's really helped me. It's called I Don't Want to Talk About It. Mm. The author, but it's about male depression. And so a lot of the big talk about is covert and overt depressions,
mm-hmm.
and how men kind of, you know, dip in these realms. So overt, obviously, is just like, and male depression, we're not allowed to share emotions, right? So
sure.
we express our depression through actions, through forms of, you know, fucking shootings or, you know, being violent, yeah, right?
Asserting dominance in
exactly.
some type
and
of way.
Mm-hmm. And so then covert is on the other side. It's like the guy who is a womanizer, who sleeps with women to gain that power, that importance, that almost that little, you know, one up or a mushroom in a video game, right? And it's really seen that way. And I resonated with that a lot. I was like, damn, like this has some truth. When I was, you know, seeking women as a, you know, those type of going out and shit, and not realizing that I was doing this to heal myself.
Yeah, yeah.
To fix a part of me. It was like a drug addict. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that I was doing that because I was hurt.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know how to speak on something. So then I would wild out, or if I was in a relationship, I'd go seek another person because I was trying to fill a void and I was trying to, you know, heal myself through it, ultimately a negative route.
Yeah, I definitely resonate with that. And I'm just glad that both of us are on that journey, and I can learn so much from you as you're already a father, because the baby is...
Yeah.
Yeah. Typically, like, technically not born yet, uh-huh. but she's alive.
But yeah, she's kicking.
Yeah, so she's here, but yeah.
Yeah, so that audio book is called I Don't Want to Talk About It. It's by Terrence Real.
Terrence Real.
Really just from a psychological lens and takes you down this journey of understanding how depressed we are as men.
Yeah, I've been on my... I'm like... All right, I'm in a good place now, but like, yo, there's still like this dormant energy that I need to address. And it's kind of like just taking shifts. It's like the security guard who's working the night shift.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, there's going to be the time where it's like the inner work is centered around going deeper and scooping up the traumas at the very mm-hmm. bottom of the murky
digging
lake.
That sludge.
And we're just lucky that we know that we have the work to do, and mm-hmm. we're capable of doing it, yeah. and that we love ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
and then we're strong enough to hold ourselves accountable.
Yep,
you know, for the actions we've done, for the things we've, you know, said, all that.
Yeah,
we have to be accountable for that.
Yep,
and own it, and wear it. You know, fuck, yeah. you have to wear that shit. Most and definitely. I think a lot of us men, you know. Not speaking on myself, but you know, there's some men out there that literally should be on some Inglorious Bastards, you know, when they got the Nazi
yeah.
shit on their head. And that's how, you know, how deep rooted it is that we need to call these people out.
Yeah.
Because these men also need the best for them is to be called out.
Yeah.
Ultimately, to be held accountable when you're called out on your shit and you have to hold that and wear that shit.
Yeah,
you have to. And I think, you know,
people would act differently in that case. If people knew that they were going to be held accountable, then mm-hmm. they would do better.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well, I'm this conversation is.
Yeah, we can go a whole.
Well, yeah, we got full panoramic view 360 of Cesar. But thank you so much for being Glimpsed. Here and for being so open and sharing your story. And thank you all for listening to Opening Presence.